Hello there, and thank you for joining us on another official EFL podcast. Stevenage sit fourth in Sky Bet League One, led by the effervescent Steve Evans. The Scotsman's our special guest this week.
There's his name, it's 11v11. And as we all know, then you have to be up for every game. So we respect everyone in them, but certainly we fear none, no.
David Stahl returns to keep me in check and this podcast on track. I will also hear from the EFL's Liam Scully, who will fill us in on all the tremendous work our clubs do in their local communities. Welcome one, welcome all to the official EFL podcast. Right then, we've kicked off. It's time to attack this pod alongside the toughest of our commentators at Sky Sports, David Stahl, who was up at Preston taking in the QPR game and didn't look cold at all. How, why, what have you done? What are you made of? Tell me, please.
I was bitterly cold. It was all an act, but I managed to somehow keep spitting the words out. And I think it was -4 when we left Deepdale. And I was still shocked, really, that we had a game, because I kind of turned up assuming I was just going to get back in the car, turn around and go home again. But they did really well to cover the pitch, to try and keep the pitch as warm as they could. And fair play to Preston and to QPR, who gave us some sort of game. It wasn't the greatest entertaining spectacle for an hour, but the final half an hour was decisive. QPR did the business and got the points.
Are we a heated gilet type of guy?
Well, I do have one. I didn't actually wear it that night. I just had a lot of layers on. But Courtney was next to me, Courtney Sweetman-Kirk. She was gilet'd up, and it did the trick for her. So yeah, that will definitely come out during December and January for me.
Yes, she's a big advocate of the heated gilet, and also a wonderful addition, I think, to the co-commentary and pundit stable, shall we say, and an all-round good person. Hello to you, Courtney. Hopefully you're listening to this. If not, you're not any of those things because you're not listening to the podcast. let's get stuck into the rest of the weekend then. There were a couple of managerial movements. One I would class as surprising. Another one, given the position of the club that we're going to talk about, perhaps less so. Let's go with Sunderland. Tony Mowbray's moved on. He took them to the playoff semi-finals, one of the youngest teams in the division. There seemed to be a little bit of consternation, of course, off the back of them not getting to the playoff final. Is this, Stowley, a case of that coming to a head? Is it warranted from what you've seen so far this season and the performances and results of Sunderland?
I think this is a really tricky one to handle in terms of opinion on it, because from the outside looking in, I think quite a few people were shocked when they heard the news, particularly when you look at the league table. Sunderland are, as it stands, 3 points off the playoffs. So, I mean, you know, a good weekend and you're right there knocking on the door. So in terms of that, it seems very odd in some ways. As you said, last season was terrific. What he's done at Sunderland while he's been there, with a very young side, with some real issues along the way, striking issues in particular, obviously with Ross Stewart being injured for a fair while before he was moved on. Ellis Sims, of course, came in and then was injured, and they didn't have a number nine for a good long spell, but still managed to win games by sort of rotating Jack Clark and Alex Pritchard and various other players in that role. Of course, Ahmad was terrific last season as well. So some really good players in there. And it is a very tight league this season. So it's a bold move. I'm not going to say it's right or wrong. I spoke to some Sunderland fans on social media this week, and some were saying, as painful as it is to say it, it's the right move. It's just not quite working this season. But of course, often you judge whether it's right to sack a manager based on what happens with the next manager. Because if someone comes in and Sunderland win the league and go up to the Premier League, then it was the right call because they've made the change at the right time, January window and all of that. If Sunderland do what Birmingham have done recently and sort of slide down the table, albeit, of course, Birmingham could rise again, then question marks are there. And that's how I'd kind of put it at the moment. I don't really know myself how to pigeonhole this. It kind of depends on who comes in, and there's lots of talk about who will come in and what may or may not happen and who might come in January players-wise. It's a wait-and-see decision, I think.
I think as well there were kind of comments coming out or things being alluded to with regard to the way that club's structured, getting players in, recruitment. I know that Tony is a real advocate of developing younger players, but he is also a pragmatist and knows that within that younger player development, you do need established championship quality. And I think what he was getting from, I mean, that team at its best is a glorious football club to watch in action on the pitch. The likes of Jack Clarke, as we know, doing things with the football that we all love. So as you say, jury's out with regards to who comes in next. In a slightly different set of circumstances, we've seen Michael Duff move on from Swansea City. Wonderful job, of course, at Barnsley, getting them all the way to the playoff final, losing to Sheffield Wednesday. Came in off the back of a certain way of playing that Russell Martin had. And I think, balance of fairness, though, it was a style of playing that hadn't got Swansea into the top six, was it? It was a style of play that wasn't getting them knocking on the door of promotion. So there was a bit of a change. Can you understand this sacking with Michael leaving Swansea?
I think I can understand that it wasn't quite working at Swansea, and we'll never know whether more time given to Michael Duff would have changed things. The opinion sort of in South Wales, I think generally from the Swansea side of things, is that it wasn't working, and it didn't work from the start, really. He's been there 6 months, hasn't he? He had one win in eight games before he was sacked. Seven games without a win when he came in. And sometimes if people are on the fence about you or the appointment of you, when you start badly like that, they can really make up their mind very quickly. I think the defeat against Cardiff, which historically, recently at least, had been a very successful Welsh derby for Swansea City, that defeat, the manner of the defeat, the comments after it didn't go down well. So I think maybe Swansea as a club and as a fan base were ready to move on, albeit it's only been 6 months. But you don't get a long time as a manager sometimes to make that impact. And again, it's now all about the next move, which clearly, having had Russell Martin in the door, I mean, Steve Cooper did great things at Swansea. Yeah. Russell Martin came in, imposed his style. He's now gone. Michael, obviously, as well. So the next appointment is huge for Swansea City. And it will be fascinating to see who gets the nod there, because it's a great club. It's just, it's a club and it's got identity. It's now about results, and it has to be about results, not just about the performance, the way you play and all of that.
Well, certainly is, given the fact that Swansea sit 18th in the Championship. Still a fair way away from the bottom three, but as you quite rightly alluded to, David, their eyes are looking above. And as you work your way right to the very top, Leicester back to winning ways, a wonderful last-minute goal from Harry Winks. Ipswich doing their thing in second, Leeds third, Southampton fourth, West Brom fifth, Hull sick. Now, speaking of Ipswich and Hull, their games at the weekend garnered two exceptional goals. For Ipswich, it was for Ipswich. For Hull, it was against them, taking on Watford. Two goals at least of the weekend, if not the month, if not potentially of the season when it comes to it. Wes Burns for Ipswich Town is possibly one of the greatest goals I've ever seen. Wesley Hoot for Watford. Given the distance, I mean, the instant straight line to that is David Beckham, of course. And look what he did for his career. I think he's still around Bex doing bits and bobs. You don't really hear too much about him anymore. If you listen to this, if you've not seen either, A, where have you been? B, get on YouTube and see it straight away, because there are things of differing beauty. David Stowell, which one is the better goal for you?
Well, I have to say, and I've watched them both a lot over the weekend, and then again when I knew we were going to talk about these, for me, it's the Ipswich goal, because seven players are involved in that goal in a move sort of involving multiple passes between the seven players, and then the finish is outstanding. Mm-hmm. Now, I commentated, I was lucky to have the goal Sunderland against Reading last season. Terrific goal. We talked about Jack Clarke already and Tony Phenomenal. Mowbray and all of that.
Yeah.
Wonderful goal. Started out from the back with a goalkeeper, worked his way up the right-hand side all the way. Jack Clarke, lovely.
I think you used the phrase liquid football, did you? Or no, sorry.
I think I probably should have. but that was a wonderful goal. And for me, if you've got a goal which has multiple passes with various different players involved, that has to be better with a quality finish like Wes's was than a one-hit wonder goal. And Wesley's goal was great. And I mean, he's talked about the fact that in the previous game or previous games, they've thought about goalkeepers being off their line and what are they going to do if they win the ball. And he sort of picks up the ball, looks up, sees where the keeper is and says he didn't quite have the chance to do it against Leicester because the goalkeeper was a little bit more withdrawn than normal. But this time he won the ball off Liam Delap and he thought, where's Ryan Allsopp? There he is, ping over the top. And of course, Ryan, it goes over Ryan's head. And then Ryan immediately turns and shouts at his defence, saying, what are you lot doing? But for me, Wes Burns is the better goal. But when do you see two goals that outstanding in one weekend, let alone, as you say, a month or maybe even a season? Astonishing stuff from both.
Both absolutely glorious. And I can see goalies doing that all the time. The other side of that is, of course, we've alluded to the fact that Watford had half an eye on Ryan Allsop's positioning. But I know for a fact, and I toiled in central midfield. I was never a ball player. But if my centre-half had tried that and got it completely wrong, it'd have got an earful from at least me and everyone around him saying, what on earth are you doing? But the minute it sails in, it's best laid plans and all that. And there's a big round of applause and everyone pats each other on the back. Right, let's get stuck into League One. Very quiet the weekend, wasn't it, with an FA Cup weekend, and pretty much everyone that was involved in it wiped out the whole of that particular card. But a big win for Pompey got them back to the top of the division after we'd seen Bolton, of course, top League One. That race, we're going to be chatting to Steve Evans, of course, the Stevenage boss, in due course. He calls them a little bad apple because they are keeping company with some very, very big teams indeed. This race for not just the automatic spots, Stowley, but the actual title itself, it's got some big names knocking around, hasn't it?
It has, and it's got some real talent in there as well. I have commentated on quite a few of that top six this season and watched a lot of their standout players as well, either in the games I've done or sort of watching them in general on the internet and stuff. And it's got a lot of ability to go a long way, this title race. But also there's that threat in the back of your mind of the January window when clubs from the Championship and maybe come beyond swooping will have a little look and say, right, I fancy that player to come and do a job for us at a higher level. And that's the danger of doing well before Christmas, isn't it? If you can lock your squad down in January, then go on a run and get up to the top towards the end of the season, then you can go under the radar a little bit. But the likes of Portsmouth, Bolton, Oxford, Stevenage, Peterborough, Derby, the top six at the moment, are all doing brilliantly. And there are players which are the reason why they're doing brilliantly. And so the challenge now is to keep the squad together, keep on moving upwards and keep on getting the points. Because, yeah, that's going to be a fascinating race for the title to get up to the Championship.
We'll keep our Stevenage powder dry because we'll get the view from the horse's mouth. And we all know that Steve Evans will give us exactly what he thinks. And I can't wait to chat to him in due course. Matt Taylor's back. He didn't hang around too long, did he? Kicking his heels. Came out of Rotherham. He's now back at Bristol Rovers. Given what he's done at this level, it was only going to be a matter of time. And I don't mean that in a remotely condescending way, of course, given where he's been for the last portion of his managerial career. But wasn't it always something that Sir Alex said about the next job is the best job? You've got to get back on the horse pretty much as soon as possible when in managerial terms, because you can quite quickly become forgotten in a way. But he seems to have seen the size of Bristol Rovers, seen the size of the project there, and jumped in with both feet.
Yeah, and I think it's a good fit, but I also think it's a really important job for him. As you say, he did terrifically well at Exeter, did really well with getting them up into League One, and just embracing what Exeter City was all about with bringing on the youth players and getting the best out of a lot of players that perhaps previously hadn't performed to their best at other clubs. Mm-hmm. He really has that ability, I think, the man management side of it, as well as the coaching side of it, to get the best out of certain players. Great example of that, Giovanni Brown at Exeter City, who turned up at St James's Park, not having really pulled up any trees in recent seasons, but became a key member of the team that got promoted from League Two up to League One. Now, off-pitch matters sort of took over in recent times when he left to go to Bristol Rovers, and Matt Taylor and Giovanni Brown are now reunited. And Giovanni Brown is one of those players who can make a normal team a very good team. And I think Bristol Rovers already have potential in their ranks to be a very, very good team. But if he gets playing in the right way with a manager who he knows and trusts, that could be a partnership that really, really boosts Rovers at the table. And it was interesting to see he had the Game of the Year EFL Trophy, which they lost against Crawley. He made three changes. He was trying to sort of keep a bit of regularity to the team and the selection. And he was just frustrated. They had 20 shots and only scored once. And he was sort of saying, the key to this team is scoring the goals. Everything else is in place. Mm-hmm. He just needs the goals to go in. And it's a very easy thing to say, not necessarily easy to change. But that's the problem, I think, at Rovers at the moment. If they can start scoring the goals, the rest is in place, really.
Simple. Score goals. Score more goals than the opposition. You'll do better. Football in a nutshell. I tell you who is very good at scoring goals. Stockport County. They're top of League Two. Barrow, you absolutely have to mention in third, given the fact that you've got Stockport, Wrexham, Barrow, then Mansfield, that ridiculous unbeaten run that they went on. Crewe as well, Notts County, Gillingham. You saw Stockport the weekend. You also have a soft spot for Barrow, given what they're doing under Pete Wild. Give us a bit on both, please.
Well, yeah, I was on FA Cup duty at the weekend and Stockport County were taken to a replay by Aldershot on Sunday. And it was credit to Aldershot, of course, and to Josh Stokes in particular, who may well be an EFL player in the making at shots. And indeed, they may well be an EFL team in the making because they're doing very well in the National League at the moment. The standout moment in the game, Neil Burns' first goal for Stockport. We've talked about great goals already and Messrs. Hutt and Burns have stolen his thunder really from the weekend, but he stepped out from halfway, kept on walking, got to, I don't know, about 25 yards out and thought he'd unleashed one into the top corner and he duly did.
It was wonderful.
So that was a good way to score your first goal for a club. But in terms of Barrow, yeah, I think sometimes in football there can be quite a lot of snobbery, if you like, about teams that you don't know a lot about. You just sort of cast aside and say, well, they're not interesting or they're not particularly good. And a lot of football fans don't necessarily know a lot about Barrow, the backstory to Barrow. We've talked about them a little bit on this pod before, but I think they're one of the sides at the moment. Everyone's sort of expecting them to drop away a bit because of the likes of Stockport and Wrexham, who get all the headlines in League Two, Notts County and Mansfield as well. But they're top of the form table over the last five games because they've won them all. 15 points from 15. Second in the form table over the last 10 games behind Stockport. They've only taken 3 points fewer than Stockport in that time. And nobody else has picked up more points away from home this season in League Two. They're level with Stockport on that. So it's no surprise Pete Wild's been nominated for League Two Manager of the Month award. George Ray, 3 goals and assists as a centre-half in the month. And before they were put out of the cup the other day, they won 7 in a row. So, I mean, it's going terrifically well for Barrow. They've just got to keep on plugging away, really.
So they've got to keep on plugging away because they want to get... excuse me, it's winter. I'm getting a little bit croaky, Stowley. I'll get rid of this before the weekend. they're plugging away with eyes on promotion, plugging away down at the bottom, hoping to keep the National League arm's length. Tranmere Rovers, Nigel Adkins. Yes, there's. I've spent a lot of time with Nigel, and the perennial opinion on him is you'll never find a more positive man in your life. I mean, and in football, that is absolute gold dust, given what this game can do and where it can kick you around your body. But they are currently 3 points above the bottom two, given what the season's thrown up, given the size of this football club. I remember playing against Tranmere Rovers when it was a second tier team. They used to have a communal bath there, which was utterly disgusting. And I sincerely hope that has been banished to the pages of history.
That's for another podcast.
That is an awful podcast, mate. Yeah, don't worry. If you're listening to this, I just apologise profusely. But that battle to avoid the drop into the National League and knowing and feeling Tranmere's experience of that, is that at the absolute kind of burning core of what propels them, potentially Rovers, away from those dangerous positions?
Yeah, the drop down to the National League is feared because not only do you not want to not be an EFL club, but it's so hard to get out of the National League. Just ask the teams we talked about in League Two, Stockport and Wrexham. You know, they've not come up easily. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to be dropping down. Indeed, a team like Scunthorpe, because they're now top of the National League North, I think at the moment, having dropped down from the EFL to the National League and then drop down again. So there's, you know, it's very difficult once you go down to get back up again quickly in that sort of pyramid system. Now, we've talked about how important it is to have a managerial appointment that makes a difference. Well, look no further than Nigel Adkins. As you say, Mr. Positive, loves a morning walk and maybe, and as we've seen on social media over the years, and maybe gets a lot of inspiration for his team talks on his morning walks. But he's made a big difference since becoming permanent manager. He was interim after the sacking of Ian Dawes. Then he became permanent manager, unbeaten in November, 8 points from 4 games. And of course, he's Tranmere through and through. It's his hometown club. Boyhood fan. He was a player there, made his debut at 17. So he's talked about it when he got the job as being an honour and a privilege to be in charge. And, you know, he is pushing this team on and up the table. And that's bad news for the likes of Sutton and Forest Green, who are the two at the bottom. And on form at the moment, Tranmere are looking very much to leave them behind.
So that will be an intriguing one between now and the end of the season. I mean, the end of the season seems so far away, but do you know what, Stowley? It will be here before you know it. And normally on the podcast, I give you a little break in the middle, but no. You're not having a little break in the middle. Liam Scully is, of course, Lincoln City CEO, but he works within the EFL, doing a lot of work within the communities and the setting up of what the EFL wants to do in the various communities around the clubs in the pyramid. Some wonderful work being done there. We're going to chat to him next. As I said, in due course, we're going to hear from Steve Evans. I can't wait to speak to him. He'll give us chapter and verse and why Stevenage are doing so very, very well indeed. But up next, it's Liam Scully. Well, last month saw the EFL Week of Action, which spotlights all the incredible work undertaken by EFL clubs in the community. Liam Scully from the EFL is with us. Liam, thank you so much. How would you reflect on that week?
Yeah, I think it was a fantastic week. Obviously, things that we see day in, day out within our clubs and within our club community organisations, CCOs, they deliver fantastic work, you know, every single day of the year. But ultimately, the Week of Action is a time that we shine a light on that. It gets the profile and the attention that it very much deserves all year round. And it's just fantastic to hear the depth of the stories and see the work that goes on within our communities delivered through the vehicle of our football clubs and CCOs. It's a really enjoyable time.
And I guess it's a busy time, isn't it, as well, because you've just come off the back of the EFL Trust Conference, and it's important to sort of get together in one place, if you like, reflect on all the work going on in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's you know, it's such an important space that we all operate on as anchor institutions within football clubs, you know, within our towns and cities of which our club take their name. Our job isn't just about Saturday at 3 p.m. and what goes on in the green rectangle. It's about off the pitch as well. And, you know, I've heard Prutz talk very articulately in the past about his role when he was a player and the responsibility and the social responsibilities that he had. And I think it's our job as football clubs as well to be the facilitator for that, not just changing lives, genuinely and sincerely at times saving lives. So, yeah, clubs and community organisations, you know, sitting together, strategising, planning what the future looks like is an incredibly important time. And the fact that, you know, the willingness, and you just can see it, you know, the rich debate that we have when we're in that setting and the engagement from everybody shows how important it really is to us all.
That was the key thing, I thought, Lynn, that came out of being there during the course of the week, being able to chat to people and listen to different motivations, different kind of thought processes. In that room, in that wonderful hotel in Crewe, there was so many ideas being bounced around. And the main thing was that enthusiasm and that want to do good things for good people and good communities.
Yeah, and I think this is where there's the real difference. Because let's be honest, you know, sticking my day job hat on as a chief executive of Lincoln City, you know, we'd do anything, you know, pretty much within the rules on a Saturday at 3 p.m. to get a win. whereas in this environment and in this space, it's actually about how does the community of football, how do the 72 clubs within the EFL, how do we work together, share best practice that then enriches and improves, you know, communities elsewhere? And ultimately, our CCOs, they solve local problems through local people. But this is then looking at it on that scale and, you know, hearing what goes on in Doncaster and Stoke, you know, in Wigan, you know, with some of the presenters that told us about these fantastic stories. And the impact that they have. And I think that's the real difference between this. You know, we're all competitive beasts. It's all really important to get those 3 points on a Saturday. But ultimately, this is a very different space. And yeah, it's really enjoyable getting together with colleagues. And like you say, in that kind of spirit of sharing and openness in order to provide some real solutions and deliver some real challenges and meet the solutions around challenges that society face right now.
It was announced that Debbie Cook will become the EFL Trust Director of Community next year, which is a very big title and very wordy. I like that. Tell us about Debbie and what she's going to bring to the role.
Well, I think first and foremost, I think this is a great example in the fact that, you know, Debbie is currently Chief Exec of Grimsby Town. So in this space, you're going to see Lincoln City and Grimsby Town work together.
Any rivalry there at all, Liam?
Of course, but we can put that to side and be grown-ups for a period of time. Debbie has an extensive history and background working in the charity sector, working in the public sector and working in the private sector, and not least her time working as chief executive at Grimsby Town. So we see this as a really important appointment for us, somebody that can clearly blend and see and has all vantage points of those different roles. But this is ultimately our most senior executive that is going to drive the organisation within the EFL Trust forward and in order to deliver the future EFL community strategy holistically as well. So, you know, the team have done a fantastic job within the EFL Trust, very dedicated and vocational, workforce. But Debbie coming in to lead it is an incredibly exciting time for us all. And we very much look forward to welcoming Debbie when she joins formally at the end of February.
And exciting times as well with the new partnership now with Sport England too.
Yeah, so Sport England's executive director, Phil Smith, joined us at the conference and he really set out the scale of the challenges that we face ahead of us. So, being able to formally announce the EFL Trust has become a strategic system partner of Sport England was another key moment and a proud moment for everybody within the Trust. So, what does that mean? I think is ultimately going to be the question. Well, first of all, the EFL Trust will receive long-term national lottery funding from Sport England. And our commitment is to influence positive change and drive improvements across our network and beyond that. So Sport England have an approach, a partnership that's around uniting the movement strategy. So we're very much firmly going to be part of that. So that's where some groups are typically less active, women, people with long-term health conditions, disabled people from ethnically diverse communities, maybe lower even socioeconomic groups. So basically EFL Trust, clubs and CCOs working with their communities in order to meet some of those longer term challenges that people at Sport England level and national government level are seeing and recognising as trends up and down the country.
You say looking to the future. I mean, looking ahead to the next 12 months and beyond that, what is it that excites you most about what EFL clubs can accomplish in their particular communities?
Yeah, that's a great question, Prutz. I think we are at a real milestone for clubs and their communities and what we're doing. And I think that the whole world has woken up to the phenomenal depth of work that goes in through the vehicle of football clubs and community organisations. So for us, this is very much behind the scenes about much of the same. But I think what's most pleasing is just the attention that it's getting, the awareness, how proud people are, how proud fans are of their clubs when they see them doing this work. So very much then linking back into, that football agenda as well. And this is, without sounding really corny, this is football working together collaboratively in order to help solve and meet challenges within local communities, up and down the country from Plymouth to Carlisle and everywhere in between. So I think the thing that we're looking forward to most is much of the same, but with that greater awareness and attention. And with attention comes the pressure to deliver, but we're very much up for that and we're very much up for that challenge. So I think it's an exciting 12 months ahead of us and ultimately a key milestone for football as well as we look forward to kind of hopefully new deals coming through and the whole reorientation of football and that funding mechanism that throws through the game, through the system, how then we can add even more value within our communities.
Well, I mean, it's continually commended work and it's something that I said during the course of the week when we were chatting. It's just blows my mind and how much football clubs do mean to communities and how much communities mean to football clubs. And it's one of the most wonderful relationships I've seen, both personally and professionally. Just to knit it back to specific clubs, Liam, you mentioned, of course, your role within Lincoln City. Currently sat ninth in League One. We're chatting to Steve Evans very shortly indeed. Stevenage sitting fourth in the division. You're just 6 points behind them. Keep rubbing shoulders with some very big names. Charlton just below you, Blackpool, Barnsley, Derby in and around. What are the aims for Lincoln City this season?
Well, I think perhaps that's what what a fantastic football pyramid we have. The fact that the likes of Lincoln City, a couple of years ago we missed out in the playoff final. We lost against Blackpool in the playoff final, and at that time we'd have been the first club to go from the National League to the Championship within 4 years. And then you look at the names that we're competing against now. The number of former Premier League clubs that we have in our division. The big. Clubs with great history and heritage that we're competing against. But how fantastic is that for the likes of Lincoln City and Stevenage and others, really? And of course, our job is to look up the football pyramid. We definitely want to be competitive. We played against Steve and his team a few weeks ago. They they did us quite nicely from a corner in the 78th minute, the first game of our new manager, Michael Scabala. But I think that's the thing that you know makes us all dream. You know, with all due respect, you know, clubs like Stevenage, clubs like Lincoln City, the fact that we are going toe to toe with the likes of Barnsley, Derby, and others week in, week out. I think that's the greatness of this football pyramid. So, you know, our ambitions one day is to go above them, of course, and we think we can do that. But we're thoroughly going to enjoy competing against them week in, week out. And when you've got Steve doing the job that he's doing at Stevenage and the likes of many others, I think it gives us that all hope, you know, that option to dream, which is why we're all here.
I also know for a fact the Johnson family and Brennan in particular regards his time at Lincoln City as very, very formative indeed. And he's ended up somewhere in North London. I can't remember where it is, but I'm sure he's doing okay, is young Brennan. Anyway, Liam, thank you so much for your time, mate. Really, really informative. And keep up the wonderful work.
Thank you both.
Okay, joining us now, we've just been discussing Lincoln City with Liam Scully. We're now going to talk about a team that's fourth in Sky Bet League One. A team, in the manager's own words, the little bad apple, causing an upset at the very top of the division. It's Stevenage and it's their boss, Steve Evans. Steve, it's wonderful to see you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, gents. And good afternoon to all of you.
Talk us through it then. I mean, to say the season's going well so far, in my eyes, is an understatement. But knowing you as I do, that burning ambition, is it all running according to plan?
I think we couldn't have imagined 17, 18 months ago that we'd be in the top group of League One, Dave, considering the remit, of course, was to keep the Stevenage in League Two, you know, because it looked destined for relegation. But I think a lot of hard work by principally our chairman, our board, and Liam Hunter, our director of football, myself, but most importantly, the players. The players have been terrific. They bought into what we're asking to do. Perhaps a little bit frustrated. We've dug at some more points, but we cannot argue, we cannot complain when we see the mate of some of the clubs we're competing in, you know, on a weekly basis.
The point of view that I find that comes glowing out of you, and it always has done, regardless of where you've been or who you've been in charge of, there is never an inferiority in any Steve Evans side. There's no feeling of that. You talk about the might of these other football clubs. Yes, history, tradition, reputation, a lot of them that have been in the Premier League. But I get the feeling that your team and yourself, Stevenage as a whole, doesn't fear anyone.
No, we don't fear anyone. You know, I think we demonstrated that time and time again. We respect everyone, Dave. It doesn't matter whether we are last season's FA Cup run when we're drawn away at Gateshead or King's Lynn. And of course, the rewards was Aston Villa. But we didn't treat those two clubs any different to how we treat Aston Villa. I mean, at the end of the day, these huge clubs are iconic in English and British football. But at the end of the day, it's names. It's 11 v 11. And as we all know, then you have to be up for every game. So we respect every one of them, but certainly we fear none, no.
I suppose, Steve, that's an easy sort of thing to have as an individual, isn't it? That sort of confidence, that sort of feeling. But how do you get that through, like running all the way through your team in terms of sort of giving self-confidence to the players perhaps who need it? Or does it start with the recruitment when you are selecting your players to make sure that they've got that kind of confident personality?
Yeah, yes, it's a good point. It does start in recruitment, you know, probably in the last number of years. I think every manager now has to put more emphasis on how they're spending the money. You know, ultimately it's the board to spend it and the chairman has to raise it and your director of football has a big say in it. But really the director of football's role is to bring options to the table and then you pick your players. So if you're doing your homework, it's probably much more now where you're speaking to previous managers or current coaching staff or former players. And just trying to get around. It's not about their ability or where you think they can play, because if you've not decided that, you're not very good at your job. So you have to talk about the character. And I think we're all guilty as managers of believing we can, cure is a harsh word, but believing we can change someone's character, which is flawed at times. And I don't think you can ultimately over a period of time. I think it does come back. And I must say, in the 18 months that we've been at Stevenage, I don't think there's there's one player that there's several players that we've not signed and not gone through with when the references coming back have not where they needed to be. And sometimes as a manager, that's the most frustrating thing, because in the bigger picture, we have people less in the structure that, of meaning to the board than me, but don't employ those people and don't give them a remit to do a job if you're ultimately going to dismiss everything they say. So there's a lot of people at Stevenage has made sure we've, as best we can, got the right players in.
And with those players, you talk about characters, but I also know for a fact that the challenge of improving a player is something that you absolutely thrive on. Take someone like Jamie Reid, for example, where not just plaudits within the building, but around the division as well, fans voting for him as a top, top player for you in that particular division. And I mean this is, let me word this question without mortally offending you. When a manager gets older in his career, is that what keeps you young? Is that what keeps you hungry, enthusiastic, that improvement of players that you come across?
Yes, I think it does, Bruce. I'm maybe getting older in years, but I'm certainly a training ground manager. The players would tell you, I think I could probably number in two or three occasions in 18 months I've not been on the training ground every day. I think you have to be on the training ground every day. You have to live and breathe, because at the end of the day, you've probably got 22, 23 players trying to get into your starting 11. And as much as your coaching staff can tell you, there's no better judgment than your eyes. The stats back it up of what you see. And Jamie Reid's a perfect example. We joined the football club. He was not making the match day squad. And perhaps Jamie, by his own admission, had lost focus a little bit and had down tools a little bit, because the previous manager or two weren't selecting him as a big player for them. But we put him straight in. We believed in him. I remembered him from his days at Torquay and watched him a couple of times with a view to signing Jamie. And whilst I never got it done, I was a big admirer. So he's been nothing short of absolutely outstanding for us. And listen, if you're in the Championship and you're not one of the elite, you come in taking Jamie Reid. I don't want that. That kills me and it kills the season, if you like. If we lose a big player, and we probably get eight or nine big, big players, and Jamie's a huge one of them with the goals and the assists, and his attitude is fantastic. The kid deserves everything he gets.
So how do you draw that out of a player then, Steve? Because someone like Jamie's a great example, isn't he? When we're looking at his record, he was terrific at Torquay, as you say. Before that, he was sort of finding his way in Devon, having sort of been brought up at Exeter, but not quite getting in the team. Mansfield, he didn't have a great spell, but obviously now under you at Stevenage, he's absolutely flying. So how do you sort of help a player like that along the way?
Well, I'm going to leave all the praise and all the accolades to Thomas for Ivan Toney, but it's very, very similar. You know, we signed Ivan Toney, and Ivan Toney always scored a goal, but he didn't score goals to the level he does now and the consistency he does now. So we've done a lot of work with him in the training ground, a bit being less on the touchline creating and being a 10, and more being a 9 and running behind and getting a goal and being strong. So there's a lot of training ground work. But the other side of the coin for this team is that they have to want to do it as well. They have to want to spend the extra hours. They don't want to be in the car at 2:30 driving out of the training ground. They have to be out there on the training ground, and we get two brilliant coaches in Paul Rain and Alec Ravel, who assist me in every minute of that with Jamie Reid. But it was the same back with Ivan. You have to get the boy. You have to have the talent in there first and foremost to get it out. You have to give them confidence. If you're buying into a player and you're doing that work with him and he's delivering, you have to tell him how good he is. You have to remind him. But at the same token, I remind Jamie Reid every day how good he can be. How good he can be. When you've worked with Chris Wood and you've worked with Marriott and you've worked with Toney, and Reid has a lot of those attributes. But I'll tell you what, he wants it now. But he really needs to want it as much as what Ivan did, as what Jack Marriott did. And he's getting there very quickly now, and that's why we think so highly of him. So he's gone full circle just by confidence, belief, remind him what abilities he's got, you know. And he used to be an introvert in the dressing room, Pritch. You know what this is like. He used to be an introvert. Now he's an extrovert. They've all sing a song to him. Jamie Reid, big goal reader of the column, and he embraces it. And but I can remember a young Ivan Toney coming in at Peterborough, and Ivan's never going to be an introvert when you get to know him, but he was when he came into the dressing room when Gordon and Cummings were scoring every week, and Ivan was quite quiet, but suddenly in came the performances, in came the goals, in came an outstanding world-class player. And from that, just give them belief, confidence, and point them in the direction of what the rewards are for those kids to do very well.
That, I mean, the example that you use of Ivan is stunning, really, Steve, because a lot's made. Obviously, everyone since day dot has always wanted to be a footballer. The margins are getting smaller. That bottleneck is getting smaller. The chances to get near that top echelon, where it's fair to say Ivan is, and obviously matters off the field notwithstanding, you're talking about a player there that's coveted by, I would say, a lot of the top four, let's be honest, because of what he's done. The player that you saw then, the person that you saw there, what gets him from there to the England squad? Yes, the ability's got to be there. From what it sounds like, it comes from in here and it's harnessed by the likes of yourself. Meeting the right teacher at the right time, coupled with a burning desire and hunger. Is that what elevates somebody who could have spent his career in League One, doing okay, being fine, and just getting along with it, to one that is potentially a Premier League superstar?
Yeah, I think you hit it. The nail right on the top of his head there, Bruce. I think it has to come from within. I've just been explaining that about Jamie. And Ivan always wanted and always believed he could play at Newcastle when he signed for Peterborough. And I felt for the kid never to be given an opportunity. But as I've said to him, if you're Rafa Benitez at the time, somebody has to be putting, looking at a comic where there has to be putting a snowball in your face every day to say, this is how good I am. Mm. And when Ivan come what we are, when Ivan then became, if you like, the player in League One, the star, the one player that a lot of clubs, certainly Barry Fye and myself were in talks with a number of clubs, including the club that I love, Celtic, for example. But I can remember sitting down with Ivan and his dad and just having a coffee and saying, you have to go now to the next level of a coach, the next level who's going to take you beyond what we've done. Mm. And it might be two steps to be joining the joint. It might be two steps. And I think Brentford, with Thomas in the building, with the structure above them, with the level-headedness they have around the football club with Matthew, I thought that was right. And I think it's right with players that we all want to sign with one of the top four or top five players. We want it as managers. But I believe the steps, and it's how you handle the steps. And Ivan has got that inner belief, that inner desire, that inner hunger. And believe me, from going to Brentford and scoring goals in the Championship and suddenly becoming a Premier League player, he didn't stop there. He wanted to embrace it further. And that's what you want players to do. If they come from non-league to League Two to League One to the Championship and the EFL, you want them to embrace it all the way through and go and play as high as they can, because these days are quickly gone, as we all know.
Very true. I mean, before Stanley steers it back on to Stephen, it's just a little touch individually, because we've spoken about Ivan Toney enough. We've got you, Steve Evans, on. Let's talk about you for a couple of minutes, Steve. Almost 20 years being in the dugout, telling people what to do and leading teams and winning promotions and creating memories for fans far and wide, games numbering in the four digits. What's different?
I think maturity, with a simple answer, David. I think if I'd have controlled my passion and my commitment 10 years ago, I wouldn't be managing in League One, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Because success and development of players and developing success and taking clubs to levels perhaps have not been before was perhaps, it's not unprecedented, because of people at Neil Warnock still hanging around looking for jobs. he's still telling everybody he don't want a job.
You can't get rid of him.
Charlotte's she's already doing a head in. She's doing a head in. And so they want to, so I think maturity, Pritz, I think how you deal with situations, how you manage things. People that come and watch Steve and his team there will be quite surprised that perhaps your games, they don't see me many times, because I evaluate more. Mm-hmm. And I think I had a number of managers, including Roy Hodgson, who's obviously a lot older than me, Roy, but what I heard them say is you mature, you're more analytical, you're more thoughtful, you're more careful, you can still have mad moments of passion, as we've seen even like to Roy, but as a rule, I think it's maturity, development of yourself, and really how football has changed and the standards that the governing bodies quite rightfully want within the game. You have to move forward with that.
And clearly you're you know doing terrifically well at the moment. You've got a long way to go and lots more to give in the game. But when you look back, I mean, I don't know whether you do look back or whether you kind of have the sort of the blinkers on to keep on going. But do you look back and have pride in what you've achieved so far in the game?
Well, I think there's no doubt that I think by the odd exception, every club I've gone into is come out on the other side much more successful. You know, from way back in the days of Boston and Crawley, certainly when you go into Rotherham, you know, people would say, I then, you know, went to Leeds. They hadn't won a home game in 8 months. Leeds United hadn't won a home in 8 months. Mm. Incredible statistic that the manager shouldn't get 8 months to win a home game for Leeds United. You should be gone. It's Leeds United, and it's one of the top six or seven clubs in British football. So I come out of there, I helped some friends, the Radford family at Mansfield. And were people perhaps forgetting that? 22 unbeaten, third in the league, games on hand to go top when I went to Peterborough. And it's the only club other than Glasgow Celtic that I'd have left for dead, because I've lived in the city for 30 years. My wife's family are all season ticket holders and go behind the goal and sing obscenities at me when I turn up with my team. They still don't stop. My brother-in-law Thomas is a nightmare. But, you know, so from that point of view, I think I look back with pride on what I've achieved. But at the same token, I also look back in certain aspects and think, slap on the wrist. And, you know, but I have to live with that. Then I have to live with proving at the back end of my career, I still have that hunger and desire to be successful. Because if we finish, whatever we finish in the table with Stevenage, we've been a remarkable success. If we finish it in the Championship, it's the best achievement from any club in the history of English football. That would be incredible. But you know what? We're going to have a right go. And if we fail, at least we can go into some holidays thinking we've had a right go. But if I'm sitting there at the mates of Bolton Wanderers and Derby and Charlton and Portsmouth and Barnsley, and I could keep going, who are thinking there's not a chance we can get ourselves in there. Maybe they're proved to be right. But they certainly know we'll have a go. I'm not so sure everyone will have the same passion to have a go as what we will.
I think, I mean, that's something I think we can both wholeheartedly agree with. It does remind me of, you talk about the places that you've been, and we were stood in the tunnel at Elland Road and we were having a very revealing chat, which is all off the record. You can leave that for the book, Steve, because when the book comes out, I'm like, my word, I'll be buying that. Yeah. Because when you talk about extenuating circumstances, that possibly might fit into that. But anyway, it all seems very calm at Stevenage. Like I said, fourth in the division, 3 points behind Bolton, who were second, Pompey at the top with 42. You said there's no fear with regards to what Stevenage can achieve. I'm not after a specific placing, but can it happen? Can we see Stevenage in the Championship?
When I went into Rotherham, they were 19th in League Two. And I can remember my first meal with Tony Stewart, and he said to me, tell me where we'll be 3 years today. And probably been a lot more bullshit and troublesome then than I am now. I said, Jimmy, you're just a finished up in the Championship. And he said to me, well, if you've done that, I'll pay you all your bonuses and I'll buy you a Bentley. I've still got that Bentley. I've still got it. And,
wow.
But it can we get there? Yes, we can. Are we going to have to be even better in the second part of the season than the first? Yes, we are, because there is some really terrific clubs. That's not blowing them away, but it's, you know, when you look at the quality of the player at Pompey, if you look at Bolton, Peterborough, we had a 2-2 draw with Peterborough and threw away a 2-goal lead just over a week ago, and they were exceptional. They could have beat us 4-5-2. So we don't go away and hide from that and thinking we've drawn from Peterborough. We go away and take the action plan, which was, what as a coaching staff could we have done better at 2-0 ahead to make sure that we get 3 points, rather than perhaps we get involved in the passion of the game. So we're still learning even today.
Steve, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and have Father Christmas on your shoulder, keeping an eye on us all here. So that it's wonderful, mate.
What you don't know, that's the new signing, Dev. We just can't reveal him yet. We just can't reveal him. You know.
Well, hey, well, you'll certainly feel his presence. Ba-dum-bum-tsh. There you go. Sorry about that. Steve, it's been a pleasure. Stowley, it's been a pleasure. Steve, I'll say thank you very much off my own bat. Stowley, I'm sure you want to say something similar.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, fantastic to talk to you and all the best for the rest of the season.
Bro, you still have a great Christmas, mate, with the family and we'll look you up in the new year, yeah? Brits.
Absolutely, Steve. Look forward to it, mate. So, a huge thank you to Steve Evans, David Stowell and Liam Scully. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the follow button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@afl.com. That's podcast@afl.com. My name's David Prutton, and I'll see you same time next week for another wonderful episode of the Official AFL Podcast.